Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women.
And guinea another beer. I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
We're the Drunk Guys, and this week we're reading Wise Guy, Life in a Mafia Family by Nicholas Pileggi, or whatever his name is. Nate, start with a beer.
All right, so at the age of like 12 or 13, maybe even earlier, Hank Hill just starts hanging around the taxi stand, or the cab stand, which is actually just run by the local mafia guys, and that's how he learns the business. And so, do you think they said, "Welcome to the Underworld" by Casey VC?
Pretty also, spot on.
Isn't Hank Hill the guy from King of the Hill?
Oh, is that yeah. Henry Hill?
No. Henry Hill.
Hank is short for Henry, so yeah.
Yeah.
So this technically, I would like, this book is so much better now, knowing that it's the origin of King of the Hill.
You didn't notice that whole chapter when you talked about boosting trucks full of propane? So this book came out in 1985 and is a rare nonfiction book for us and was requested by a patron. So you're welcome, person, Kevin.
Kevin
asked for it. And it was made into the much more well-known and better movie, Goodfellas, a few years later.
Which I have not seen.
It's the book. It's really, really faithful.
Is Ray Liotta Henry?
Ray Liotta is Henry, and Robert De Niro is Burke. Jimmy Burke. Mm. And Joe Pesci is Tommy DeSimone.
Really, they got Robert De Niro to play the Irish guy?
It was foreshadowing from when he would play the Irishman.
Oh, true, yeah.
So, yeah, it takes place, starts in the 50s and runs up until basically the early 80s when the book comes out, and follows the life of Henry Hill, who is a half Italian, and that's kind of important, I guess, degenerate, who lives in, are they all in Brooklyn? Is that where they live? I forget where they start off.
Well, he's starting out in Brownsville, Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah, they're in like East New York, right? When it was shitty for different reasons.
Yes.
And
still shitty, though.
Yes, differently. And he is a kid who's, you know, he's come to a fucked up home. Like, his dad is an Irish immigrant, and, you know, that's all it takes.
They're like a nice family. There's just, you know, he's Irish, so he's got seven kids, and there's never enough money.
And the dad's abusive. You know. Like, he beats them and shit. But it was the 50s.
Yeah, but he's an Irish dad in the 50s. Like, who didn't?
Yeah. Lucky he showed up at all to beat you. Some kids, their father only beat them at their communion. So he quickly ingratiates himself with her. You know, he becomes like the little hanger arounder, and I guess people think it's cool when this little kid doing little tasks for them, and he is just enamored with the goons, the Guidos, and their bullshit. And he starts getting, you know, into doing crimes and like little petty ones, and works his way up to doing other ones. But one of the things that he is, you know, fascinated by is that they always have money, and they always have cars, and they always have like nice suits. And he gets into probably a pretty plaid habit by hanging out with these guys. This beer is called Plaid Habit from Boulevard Brewing Company, and it's a Canadian whiskey barrel aged imperial brown ale, which I can't think of anything less appetizing than saying brown ale. Except Canadian brown ale. that is fucking amazing.
It all worked out.
Just under 12% alcohol. So I don't really remember. I don't know if the details really matter that much for
the early
chapters.
Well, he gets in good with this particular family. Vario, who I noticed this line. He didn't out of jail forever, you know, as a child. He said, at age 11 in 1921, he did a seven-month stretch for truancy. Times were different then.
You're going to wish for school, kid.
You didn't go to school, so we're going to put you in fucking kid jail.
That's awesome.
Holy shit.
My impression was in the 1920s.
And it worked great.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. He learned his totally lesson. Worked. My impression was in the 1920s, up until like 1994, basically, in New York. You could just not go to school, and the system would be like, "Thank God, cool. We're not tracking him down."
Before then, they just sent you to the trenches. So,
yeah, that's true. Well, Paul Vario was the guy. He's like the big man in the area, and he's part of the Lucchese crime family, which some of my Italian relatives were part of. So, you know, it's nice to know.
Well, you are all related.
Well, if there's one thing I realized from this book, or learned from this book, is that if you had any, like, vaguely Italian people, they knew some, they at least knew somebody who was in the mafia, or were themselves connected in some way. Like, you could not escape it. It's like a weird parallel parasitic economy that exists in Italian neighborhoods at this time. And everybody's just like, that's part of it.
One thing that struck me reading the book was that people didn't see these mafia guys as preying on the community. They, you know, people looked up to them, or at least Henry certainly did, because of their, you know, fancy suits and fancy cars, and everyone was afraid of them. So they thought that was respect.
And the guys do enough decent things occasionally that comes off as being a good guy.
I mean, this is also in the days where the cops were nigh useless and just as dirty. So it was like, at least this guy's looking out for me a little bit more than the cops would. So, I mean, you're fucked either way.
And they could get you, like, petty street justice. Like, that guy cheated me in some way, or that person did this, you know.
Well, they mentioned the
pissed off my grandma, and he's like, I'll talk to him.
Came from the other neighborhood and mugged a lady, so they threw him out a window, and he died.
Exploded on the street. He's like, the black guy, right? They're like, what's that? What's he doing here? And you know the word they used. And then it's not that one though. It's not N. No ends in it. And they, you know the Italian slang for African American people? It's look it up. It's
stupid.
It's inventive for the Italian people. Like,
it is. They stopped
really discovering
like
anything new
stuff
after Columbus, and they were like, I figured it out. He's purple. So they killed, they're like, whoa, there's a black guy in our neighborhood. And like, just wait for East New York. And then they killed him for being.
Yeah, he was about 40 years too early.
He was trying to, like, whatever the, like, he was like, I'm gentrifying this neighborhood. I'm saving it from your Italians.
But
I feel like Jimmy's about to open a beer, though.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to drink it because, you know, we got to, because I want to drink it. You know, they did prey upon the neighbors.
Oh, yeah.
That's all they did was, you know, take a little bit here and there for protection and for services rendered and for, you know, bibbidi bobbidi boo, as they say. So they just had, they could get money from anything. They were, you know, not smart people, but they were experts at one kind of science, and that would be the science of extraction.
Yeah.
They can extract money from anything and your stuff from you. This is Science of Extraction from Beer Tree Brew, and it's an American IPA. It's 7% alcohol, and it probably tastes like an IPA. Yep. It does kind of have more of a, you know, that stereotypical beer flavor that non-IPAs have. So it's kind of like a mix between the two. It's interesting. It's nice. It's nice for the first warm day of the year.
Oh, man, it's glorious out. Almost as nice as, you know, ripping off an entire flatbed truck of stolen goods.
How many cashmere sweaters these people stole? And who needs that many cashmere sweaters?
They're just wearing wife beaters. I don't understand.
Sweaters are wife beaters. There's no in between.
So Henry, he, like, you know, sees how cool these guys are, and then within a year of hanging out with them, he has stopped going to school. And in fact, the city truant officer sends a letter to his parents, and his parents get the letter and his father beats the shit out of him. And then afterward, Henry tells, you know, Vario and the other mob guys, like, wait, what? So they go to, they find the postman, and they beat the shit out of the postman. They say, you know where this kid lives? They don't get any letters from the school anymore. And then he stopped bringing them any mail at all. And the mom had to go to the post office and complain. But he never went back to school.
Nope. These sort of colorful stories about the mob are the part, I think, that people like about mafia characters and shows.
It was really interesting.
It's very funny to see. But you realize, like, they're just fucking illiterate, petty crooks. It's like a, but it's a pyramid scheme. That's what the mafia is. It's the Amway of crime. Like they just, you do a crime and you pay the guy above you because you did the crime near where he does crime, and he pays the guy above him because, you know,
and he does the other crime. And the guy above him has paid off all of the police and the judges and the prosecutors to keep you out of jail. But you still have to kick him money so that he can pay the police and the prosecutors and stuff like that.
But they don't call it a pyramid scheme, though, because they never got that far into three-dimensional shapes.
No, they don't really understand that at all.
What kind of weird-ass square is this?
They only understand things that come in pasta shapes. So, in tubes. I have no key idea what he's talking about here. So then... But they're, I was going to say something else, but they're like incompetent. Like they're always like fucking this up and like pissing off somebody by getting into that guy's turf and then having an issue, which resolves with somebody being murdered half the time.
The only reason they don't get arrested more is because every cop is dirty.
And because they kill each other half the time. It's like, oh, fuck it. That guy did the crime. We don't have to investigate anything else then. And they can just pin things on each other.
Yeah,
but it's really like a pretty disorganized crime. there's not much organization. It's just kind of everything's, you know, because you don't want to put any of that in writing. Everything is just agreements and handshakes. And
the mob has this kind of, you know, weird fetishization amongst regular people. They're like, oh, these, you know, they have an honor code and they have these, you know, surreptitious means of doing things. But the truth is that they're just doing stupid bullshit most of the time and beating up random people and shooting each other. They're not doing like elaborate, occasionally there's like two actual elaborate schemes in this. The rest is just, if you don't give me money, I'm going to burn down your restaurant. It's like, okay.
And even most of their scams only worked because technology was shittier.
Yeah.
Like they're half stealing.
Half the shit is stolen credit cards. It's like,
stolen
whoa.
Credit cards or checkbooks. And then having to do like really petty crimes. Like they get this credit card, the company, you know, this is before credit cards are like automatically communicating. Like the vendor is communicating with the credit card company when you do your purchase. So they would like submit their receipts at the end of the week or the month even for their credit card purchases. So they're like, well, if you keep it under $50, they're not even going to like check or call up. And so they're just doing like over and over again, $47 scams. Like, I understand inflation. Like that's like maybe $200 now, but like, that's really not the high roller dollar amount that you think it's going to be from watching like The Sopranos or something like that. You think there's a like big paydays?
I mean, I never saw The Sopranos either. I guess I don't know what scams they have or do, because then they know he was in like sanitation because they control all the unions or whatever. But
in The Sopranos, Tony's high up, so he's
not
more
doing
like
the
union
scams.
Things, and but his shitty nephew Christopher is usually doing stupid crap like that.
It's like any big company where the grunts at the bottom do all the work and get paid not that much, and the bosses make all the money.
But at least in the mafia, they have to respect their bosses. Yeah, and a lot of it is just having the unions being utterly corrupt.
It turns out just everyone sucks all the time, everywhere.
Well, there's no... In this, I mean, I don't know if this has changed, but from the book, you get the impression that if... The choice is go along with the bribe and scam or just don't, because if you tell anybody, you'll pay for that. You might as well take the money, right? That must be like a game theory name for this dilemma.
The Guido prisoner's dilemma.
The Guido's dilemma. The Guido's dilemma is if you get chicken parmesan or eggplant parmesan for your entree. But he goes on, and then he serves in the military, which really doesn't matter, but it's just mentioned in the book because that's going to explain why he can get a check later in the story.
But also, when he's in the military, he's just doing scams there too.
Everywhere is scam. This guy is like the Forrest Gump of minor crime, of like class D misdemeanors.
Just like selling the food they don't use in the mess hall to restaurants nearby. It's like, okay, well, sure.
This guy, I mean, this is his story, right? And he has...
Yeah. We should mention that this is like, this journalist guy went to meet this dude And at the time of the interview, he's in witness protection. And this is him telling what happened his whole life to this journalist who's like writing it down and filling in background information as we go. So it's like a interview kind of, it's a loosely based interview.
Though the journalist also interviews his future wife.
Yeah.
Or past wife. You know what I mean.
And I think the side piece. I think he interviews
and the side piece for a minute, yeah.
But he can't really, other than that, he can't really confirm very much. He can't go, he just has to take Henry's word for it.
Yeah, I mean, how do you verify, like, I stole 12 boxes of hams off a truck in 1962? It was like, I guess, man, sure. Because so much of it is just stupid bullshit crime.
Yeah. And all the trucks leaving JFK, all the cargo going through JFK was stolen.
But then they have to do like this really unsexy, unglamorous legwork. So like now they have to unload the truck of blenders and then take that to like a bunch of random stores.
Not even department stores, but just like local shops.
Yeah, and like sell them out of a store on Liberty Avenue. And it's like, all right, I'm going to get $6 for each blender.
Income was like, razor blades stolen from the factory.
In cigarettes.
Yeah, and untaxed cigarettes from other states.
That's still a scam, yeah. Though. People still do that. Probably more than ever, there's incentive to do it in New York, though smoking is down. Because a pack of cigarettes in New York, it's like $16 or something.
Back then, it was like, it's like $3.75 here, but I can get it for $3.50 from these guys.
$2.10. It was a significant difference. But like when you it only works because they have compounding scams. Like they're stealing the truck from somebody else and using or like renting it, but paying with a stolen check.
And so there was like the nice guy who bribed the driver instead of shooting him.
Well, that was Jimmy. No relation, I presume.
Yeah. Yeah, we are all related by our first name.
That was actually pretty interesting where Jimmy, who just loved stealing, he just absolutely loved it, had all these elaborate things. He used to hijack the trucks, all the cargo flying into JFK, they would hijack it, and this would terrorize drivers, except he would take their, driver's license, so he'd like, I know where you live, do not tell the police. But here's a $50 bill for your trouble. And then the guys wouldn't be nearly as mad. And $50 in 1958, hundreds of dollars.
For a working class dude, that's like not a week's pay, but half a week's pay, sure.
Yeah. And so the drivers would tip him off about when they've got expensive loads that they're going to be hauling.
I will say, I know the first name thing doesn't really count, but in this case, Jimmy does do a lot of jacking for big loads.
Yeah, it's true. That also runs
and people runs tip him for it. Man's got to eat, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh,
that's a good gobble ghoul. I'm going to gobble that ghoul.
Oh. Do you know how to spell gabagool? Do you know how it's actually it has none of those letters. <It's>
like, isn't it fajol?
Fajol means beans.
Oh, that's
which
that's
is fajoli.
Yeah, yeah.
But Sicilians are fajol because
gabagool is capicola.
Yeah, capicola. It's the failed competitor product from Pepsi.
Is this sausage flavored Coke? This is disgusting.
So yeah, Sicilian. Italian, they colonize them and make them write it like as if it's Italian from Naples or Florence or something, but it's a different language really, and so that's why they pronounce everything differently or wrong if you take an Italian. Dude, I just rewatched both Godfathers. I don't count Godfather 3 doesn't exist, but I rewatched both Godfathers. By the way, they both hold up. The second one is a little long, but the first one is really great for a 50-year-old movie. And Luca Brasi, absolutely, they're like, hey, there's some money. And he goes, Ming. He just, it's exactly what he says.
He's the most Italian Pokemon there is.
I mean, he was the biggest one. He was like, he leveled up. He was like, they gave him like a pasta stone or whatever in Pokemon terms. He evolved.
But this one is also about the mob. And they made it into Goodfellas, but I don't know if we said that yet. But, we did, yeah.
I just think there's a huge difference between Goodfellas and the Godfather movies. Mm. Even though they share half the cast. Oh, by the way, this was the most shocking thing in the world to me. I watched The Godfather, right, which is from 72. Do you know, you both have seen it, right? Have you seen it at this point, Nate?
I haven't seen any of it, yeah.
Oh, right. You what? For once. You know Clemenza, the actor, the character Clemenza, Nate? Who's the one who says, take the gun, leave the gun, take the cannoli.
I can't, I think I know who that is.
Just like look up Clemenza from The Godfather to see what that guy looked like. And then he died 15 years or 16 years after the movie came out. So like 17 years after they filmed it, this man died at 55. So this man's like our age.
No. So he's like 40 in when he was filming this.
He's like 37 or 38.
He looks like if a meatball gained sentience.
I mean, that's what Sicily is.
Meatball Island.
That guy's 38.
That is a hard 38.
Wow.
Right? Crime doesn't
pay. He looks like he's never not sweating.
I don't think he ever was.
He's just sweating gabagool.
The gabagool came out through his pores.
He's 37 in this picture?
Oh, maybe 38. He died 16 years later and he was 55.
You know, I'm surprised he lived that much longer.
But the movie was filmed a year or two before that. Yeah, it's wild. I mean, he looks like the larger creature that Danny DeVito spawned off of.
Just butted off of his thigh like a starfish.
Yeah, he's like the creature. But
the
I think
DeVito,
the big
that's why his last name is DeVito.
The big difference is The Godfather kind of it really glamorizes the mob. You know, like
it's also fictional.
It's all about it is fictional, of course, but. You know, it's based on some whiffs of, you know, yeah. Whatever. But it's the power and the respect and the wealth and then, like, the scheming of the head guys. And the other people are, like, these little pawns that don't matter in the movie. Whereas this is the opposite. Like, the head guys don't matter. Like, they never talk about the heads of the families. The biggest guys they have to worry about are the made men who are, like, middle management of the mob. And so you see this other side of it. And I think that's why this was like super popular as a book and Goodfellas as a movie. In addition to Goodfellas being a really excellent movie. But it shows this other part of the mob thing that was probably, for people who knew anything about it, they're like, yeah, that's more like what I know.
Right, because this book was nonfiction. Like, it was true. And few people... The Godfather was fiction, even though the guy who wrote it, Mario Puzo, probably knew a little bit about it. But few people who was...
He lived in it. If he was Italian in America, he knew a lot about it.
But few people who were that connected to the mob would ever actually talk about it. So that's why this was unique.
Well, there's... What's the fucking... The word omerta? Omerta is the mob's don't talk rule. They have a very strong NDA. That's the only paperwork the mobsters fill out. But here, this guy violated it because he went... And so he had to go to witness protection.
Yeah. Nothing to lose at that point, I guess.
Well, they had him dead to rights for heavy duty. Well, let's get to them at the end here. So what happens next, Nate? We really haven't talked about what happens. We just talked about what it is about.
He gets out of, gets out of the army at age like 21 and then goes back and does, well, like weeks before his term was up, or not his term, but his, you know, contract or whatever it's called was up, he like gets into a bar fight and he like punches a guy.
Isn't
that what it was? And he gets
a
dishonorable discharge, but whatever. That doesn't matter. He goes back and he's like already, as soon as he gets back to Brooklyn, he's already doing more crimes and more hijackings and talks about his...
And that's when he gets into the cigarettes.
Yeah, and he, you know, he talks about a couple of his capers, like driving the car full of cigarettes where they... took a seat out just so they could put more cigarettes in the back, but then they put it in the shape of the car seat and cover it with the blanket. But then they get pulled over and they can't remember the name of the person they borrowed the car from, so they get arrested.
Well, they don't know whose name the car is in because none of these guys put anything in their name, and they all use someone else's name or a fake name. So like, I don't know who this car is registered to. Like, it could be fucking anybody. And he gives him a name, and it's the wrong one. And he's like, well, also your license is probably fake, and everything that these guys have is not attached to them. Like, they're saying, like, they don't even have fucking birth certificates, and they've never paid taxes.
The American dream.
Yeah. They should all move to New Hampshire. They'd really fit in.
Yeah, they're like proto-libertarians. Imagine being able to buy no-cost cigarettes. That's our God-given right.
Every child should have a cigarette if they want one.
I mean, in this time, in like the early 60s, every child did have a cigarette in America. Yeah. Like, smoking was
come out the mines and you smoke your cigarette. Like, let him have it. He worked all day.
I remember when I graduated from college, they were like, you know, it's been 20 years since this. Here's some perspective. And they're like, and 50 years ago was when they stopped allowing smoking in the classrooms. I was like, that was 1960. You could have smoked during class.
When were people not? You smoked on fucking planes.
Doctors smoked during your checkup. Like, people smoked
while giving birth to your kid. Like, they pulled the smoke into you while they pulled the kid out.
They gave the cigar to the baby, actually, when it was born.
So, he does, so he goes to jail, like in and out of jail, and he talks about how everyone in the justice system is like completely been paid off, and so he like rarely ever, he gets arrested a lot of times, but he like never ends up going to jail, except on very rare occasions. He does a brief stint in jail.
The witnesses that keep he comes back out. Also.
And then he finally gets, oh yeah, he...
Or evidence disappears.
He's down in Miami, and he gets into a big bar fight with his friend Jimmy. And that's when, but one of the people who was there is actually like the sister of somebody who worked for the FBI.
Well, that's
or like,
that's like
that.
Way, that's way later. Later.
Yeah, she's like the secretary. She's like a secretary in an FBI office.
All right, well... Well, I was going to get to him actually going to prison. I don't remember if... Oh, yeah, he's going to get married. That's right.
He's got... He meets, as everyone does in Long Island, he meets a nice Jewish girl. And after a little while, like a very short time, they get married, and he converts to Judaism, and he gets circumcised in his 20s.
Dude, that's...
That's dedication. I mean, that's love. That's love. I'll give him that.
I guess he really wanted to hit it, just with only 90% of his force at that point.
Yeah. And then they move in with her family while he's still actively mobbing. So
He's still in the ramping up phase of mobbing.
Yeah. I'll be back later. I could go steal a truck full of toasters again.
But he doesn't respect the in-laws. And it's one of the funny scenes in the movie where he stays out super late. And the wife is like, I don't know where he is, because it's the 60s. There's no cell phones. You don't know where the fuck anybody is until they show up. And her mother and father and her are sitting in the living room waiting for him to get home. This is in the book, too. But the scene with Ray Liotta is really great, because the mother-in-law comes out, and she's rapidly yelling at him. Like, what the like, I mean, not saying what the fuck, but like, where are you? What kind of man are you? How could you not? And he's like drunk, and he's like, he just laughs in her face and gets back in the car and leaves. Fuck this shit. And he just goes. And he's like, I mean, to have that kind of balls as a 21-year-old man is impressive in a
way. I think he's also shit-faced, so.
Oh, yeah. But, like, most of the time, I've come home drunk late at night and I'm going to get yelled at by my wife. I try to, like, sneak in and be quiet and, like, I don't laugh at her mom. I was impressed.
So they get married, and then they're eventually he moves out because he got all that, you know, stolen stuff money. But most of the book, he's just complaining about how they make just a fuck ton of money, and then they blow it immediately on gambling, mostly booze, though they never really pay their tab anywhere, so I doubt it's the booze, and hookers.
And paying off all the other mob guys.
Yeah, because they all owe each other because they always are broke from hemorrhaging money on bullshit.
This is why they need to teach fiscal literacy to children.
And now they just open payday loan places, and it's much easier.
Yeah, it's basically how the mob operated.
they're all fucking loan sharking, yeah.
But he can't quit it. You know, the rush, the excitement stealing shit and then selling an entire truck filled with sweet potatoes or whatever the fuck he's doing, and then... getting the money to
Pez dispensers.
And then like, the dumbest products, I'm sure. Like, oh my God, what are these 78 RPM records? It's 1968. You know, then there's like the low afterwards. Like, oh, that was fun, but we have to do the next one. It's like he becomes a bit of a wave chaser.
Mm.
Yeah. This is Wave Chaser from Montauk, which is also on Long Island.
That's true.
And it is, let's say, any beer that says craft beer on the can probably isn't. Or like, I think it's
Montauk's
not
still relatively small.
You can buy that at like Key Food, like at the supermarket. Yeah. It's not a beer nerd beer anymore. And it never really was. But it's a great one. It's my wife's favorite.
Sell it on the water taxi boats here.
Oh, is that right?
The ferry thing, those little like weird boats they opened up. They sell Montauk. I think only at night now. They used to sell during the day too.
It's my wife's favorite brewery we've ever been to. Because we went there and it was cold. It was like late winter, like February, I guess it was. And it was packed because it was cold. So everyone was like packed into their tiny tap room. I'm like, oh, there's no room. So we sat in our car and drank the beers, which is a real class move.
Which is a crime also.
Well, the car was parked.
Open
it was
container,
running, though,
baby.
For heat. It was probably not legal.
Do you know who fucking owns Montauk, actually?
John Lithgow.
A weed company.
Oh, all right.
That's weird.
Vertical integration there for Long Island kids.
So high it's vertical.
Isn't that what that's called? Where you like own the factory, that like you own the mine and
you
the
own
factory?
The entire chain, yeah. The supply chain. I guess you can grow hops and weed in the same area. I don't know.
They are related.
You can't, actually. I don't think you can, but hops grow in like the Pacific Northwest and upstate New York, and you need like pretty high or pretty low latitudes. I feel like, isn't pot tropical?
Not if you have a big enough grow house.
Well, sure. That's not what.
No, hippie weed grows out. You grow that out in the fucking forests in California.
Yeah, but that's all right, whatever. Well, vertical integration is something these Dagos never figure out because they're fucking incompetent businessmen.
They were definitely against integration also.
Oh, well. I am impressed that he married the Jewess, honestly, because
yeah, that's he's the loving of his era and state.
I mean, but you know, the Jews and Italians are very similar in certain ways. In fact, if you watch the Godfather, like half there are actors. There's James Caan is Jewish. He plays Sonny, and there's a Mo Green, like. Like, that's a Jewy enough name, right? Mo Green, the hotel, the Las Vegas casino owner guy, who curses them all. Is like, you dumb guineas think you could buy me? He's that guy was Italian, actually. So
that's just confusing.
They're just interchangeable, apparently, on a certain level. But one of the things in The Godfather is how like Catholic they all are. Like, they all still do have to like go through all things, and he's just like, yeah, fuck that shit.
Yeah, because he's just in it for the schemes, because it's all he's ever known.
Got to respect this hustle. So the other character they meet, Tommy, is a fucking sociopath. He is Joe Pesci in the movie, and he's another up-and-coming gangster guy who just likes to murder people. And they're just like, that crazy Tommy killing people. And they just tolerate that, because they're murderous
folks. Was his name Tommy, like, Tutone or something?
It's De Simone, I think it's. I'm not sure how they pronounce it. De Simon, not to be confused with De Alvin or De Theodore. But you know, he'll like shoot a guy on accident, quote unquote, and then
Tommy
be like, ah.
Oh, Tommy Tutone wrote 8.
Jenny.
9, 6, 7, yeah, Jenny. It's like, why do I fucking think of that name? It's like, Tutone, he must be Italian. I don't know.
Tommy Tutone Ska is an amazing.
I was thinking, like, is this a ska band? What am I? Why is his name in my head?
But there's a part. It's not in the movie. It's not in the book. But it's in the movie. That really long take. Nate, you remember, you've seen
I've
it.
I've seen it. Not I for you, I forgot. A long time though.
It's often copied now. There's this really long shot where he goes, where Ray Liotta is talking, and he introduces all of the guys. And he's like, and then there was Jimmy Two Times, and then there was this guy, and there was this guy. And it's narration, and then they're like interacting. It's like, it must have taken a million hours of rehearsal to do this one very, very long take where they're getting this exact timing right with all this moving through like a nightclub or something like that. And one of the things that I really enjoyed about the book, in general, I like mafia nicknames because I like when they come up in court and you find out the guy's real name and it's like Onofrio Bugliatello, a.k.a. Vinny Chins. Like, where the fuck did that come from? And they have, you know, these stupid names and you're like, oh, Vinny Chins, Joey the Knife, Mickey Bats. And then occasionally they just fucking don't even try. And there's a guy in the book named Frankie the Wop.
Like, how Italian must that guy have been?
Right? They're like, how could, I mean, it'd probably be funny if he wasn't Italian.
He was the one, he was the black guy.
Like, well, we need a name for this guy. Oh, this fucking guy? That's Frankie the Wop. No, yeah, that works.
He's got a pocket full of meatballs every day.
He's got the most of L. Like, how did that name appear? I have no idea. But
his
really
dad invented
that.
Spaghetti. What if we just did him long and thin?
Whoa! Oh, shit! Get the fuck out of here! This fucking guy here. But yeah, like Frankie the Wop, I was really hoping there'd be more like Joey the Guinea, Pietro the Degenerate Gambler Wop Guinea. Like just
Tony Wife Beater.
And did you notice they're all pieces of shit. Every person in the book is a piece of shit.
Oh yeah. They're all trash.
But you know who they really hate and they judge are losers. Like people who lose. Like it's like, this guy was a degenerate gambler. It's like, whoa, dude, pot, kettle, black much. Like, you're all
yeah,
degenerate
they
gamblers.
They blow all their money. They go to Vegas constantly, and they lose all their money every time.
But they really look down on a person who has shitty luck. I think that's, like, you could write some sociology paper on this. Like, those are the people that they're like, this guy's a piece of shit. Don't trust him. He's not good for, he's going to lose more money than he makes. Because he sucks. We're going to do all the same vices, but we're not going to lose money at the same rate, so we could look down on him.
Yeah. And they also look down on people who have regular jobs. It's like, it's lame.
It's being a sucker.
Yeah, when you could just be stealing from those people, it's way better.
Yeah. It's more fun. I mean, it's cooler than, you know, driving the bus or whatever. That's why you've seen a Bronx Tale? Another one of the mafia movies from this era.
I have.
When
When
the kid says to the dad, he's like, the working man's a sucker, dad. And he's like, no, the working man's tough. The working man has to actually do shit. Like, these guys aren't tough. They're a bunch of fucking babies. And it's a very good scene.
Remember when he almost buys a fucking slave?
Yeah. He uses the word slave,
but she's like, you gotta give this guy $200 and you get a slave. Yeah. And then she's too big, so he sends her back.
She made the children cry just from her existence. We should explain it's a Haitian slave. Maybe that explains it. But he imports a desperate woman from Haiti to be
his family sells her because they need money because they're in Haiti. I mean, that goes without saying.
That's for sure.
It's fucking crazy. Like, his wife didn't want to do the housework. So it's like, what if we bought a slave? Like, how did you get to that point right away, first of all?
And this
how do you
is
arrive
like,
at that?
I want to go back for the time limit. I feel like what happened first? He tried to buy a slave or the Civil Rights Act? I'm not sure what the timeline is, but they're close.
I think either way, it's too close to either one.
Oh, it's
not
definitely
the
too close.
1860s.
But I can imagine in Bensonhurst or wherever they're living, they're like, you could still buy them, right?
It's probably the fucking, like, they talk about like Valley Stream, which is, you know, you could definitely buy a slave there. That's where Shaggy lives.
Still?
Yeah.
He's in Nassau County.
He doesn't have Manhattan money. He's got I Could Live Forever in Valley Stream money. You know, respect.
I think I might have I Could Live in Valley Stream money. Like, that's not... What did that guy do? He was living like Henry Hill, just blowing all of his It Wasn't Me money?
Yeah.
Good Lord. Well, He tries to buy a slave, but he returns. Yeah, there's like a 30-day warrant, you know, money back warranty on the slave, so he sends her back to Haiti.
Yeah, what the, that was honestly the craziest part of the whole fucking book. It was just like, by the way, I bought a slave once, and then I returned her because she was too tall. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
She was 6 feet tall and at least 250 is what he says. So she was just
was that too part much. In the movie?
That was not, I don't remember that part of being in the movie.
I think they read that and they're like, you know what? We'll just leave this part out.
You have that to really, trim some things
he's no
for
longer
time.
A sympathetic character. It's like he's pretty likable, except for the whole he bought a slave once.
So he does a bunch more crimes, and this time actually gets in trouble because he and his friends are down in Miami. They get into a big bar brawl, and somebody who's like, she's like a stenographer or something. She works for the FBI, and she's there, and she tells the FBI guys, and they're like, wait, we've got mob guys in Miami? And they actually arrest him.
They threaten to murder a guy, and he is the brother of someone who works for the FBI in their typist pool.
Which must have been crazy. I mean, obviously, it was like before computers and Xerox machines and shit like that. But so she was typing stuff just as a job, just so somebody else could go over it with a black marker, just redacted on her.
It's their temporary pages, yeah.
She must have been typing on like that carbon paper.
Well, the crossing out guys have a very strong union, so you got to really separate that.
But that union is dirty, so they've been bought out.
So he goes to prison this time, not just jail. And he like is so he really doesn't want to go, and he get, you know, there's all this big farewell party and stuff like that.
No
he
shit.
Almost doesn't want to he almost doesn't go, and they're like going to like he had his plea deal still means he has to do 10 years, although he's going to get less time with good behavior, but although he doesn't have good behavior at all, which we'll get to. But he gets there, and all the mob and all the other mob guys are in jail. They're like, hey, and they have this is the part this is the part where
I didn't know you spoke Italian.
Yeah, I don't, you made me say Guinea another beer, but then you go fucking lean right into it.
and then
his hands were raised, his fingers were pinched when he said that.
I think he had a pinky ring on too when he said it.
This is the part of the movie where all the mob guys get special treatment, and they all just spend all day cooking like elaborate Italian food, and they're spending
it's called sauce.
Yeah, and they're spending
it takes all fucking
hundreds
day.
Of dollars a week on like a wine and paying off the guards, and they just have it really. And this is the part where he says, "Oh yeah, and we slice the garlic with the razor blade so it's so thin it just melts," which I thought didn't actually work in real life, but. I mean, I've never tried it.
They have all day in jail. He could be, I mean, he's like one of those guys that cuts human hairs into pieces.
But he's also smuggling in jail all the time. He's bribing the guards. The guards are bringing him all this stuff. He gets his wife to like load up her dress with meats and like bottles of wine.
He fills her vag with salami. Is that what you're trying to say?
And she's like, yeah, the guards don't matter.
Smuggle this cylindrical meat product. Where could you hide it?
Anyway, the guards are like, yeah, they don't. They're just looking for weapons. They don't care. Like, and I give them a bottle of wine as I'm, you know, so they look the other way. And I couldn't help. And I was like, okay, so is prison still like this? And while I definitely don't know for sure, I do remember a news article where like this is like 6 months into COVID. So during COVID, there were just no visitors allowed to the prisons, like no visitors. But yet drug busts, like drug confiscations, went up. I wonder where they're getting all the drugs.
It's those damn Amazon drone deliveries.
Must be, yeah.
Some guys just have a lot of things in their asshole. They smuggled a lot in.
Well, after she starts smuggling in the meat, He gets transferred to he gets a work job in prison where he's working on like the dairy farm making milk, and then he gets basically just like left alone in a field for hours at a time. So she starts bringing in duffel bags full of drugs for him to sell. So
through
that's a
the
good
fence,
deal.
He will just like, oh yeah, I'm taking the tractor and checking the fence, and then cutting through the fence, and his wife is just bringing him in all these drugs.
And then he gets transferred to another prison because there's vacancy nearby because G. Gordon Liddy had a food strike. Yeah. It's like, what the fuck?
I meant to look that guy up, but I was certain Nate would
be able to
tell he's one of the Watergate burglars.
I know he's a Watergate. I don't know anything else. I
mean, he's a fucking idiot.
One of the worst people to ever live.
Absolutely a fucking idiot, too.
He is actually like a hardcore, and I know you don't like this word, he is a Nazi. Like, he kept
No one likes the word, Jimmy. That's not an insult. G. Gordon Liddy loved it.
He was a Nixon guy, and he did all the creepy.
I know he had to do with Nixon, but I was like, I couldn't remember if he had something with Alger Hiss or is that Watergate? I didn't know that.
He's the only guy who got busted for Watergate, like the people in the government.
Okay.
And
was he the one that was like whispering to the judge, "Oh, I was meeting with the president at his arraignment"?
That might have been him.
I don't know.
H. Howard Hunt. E. Howard Hunt? It's either him or Howard Hunt.
Yeah. But he was a politics guy, and every time people would talk to him, I was like, we have to make this he would do all like the subterfuge. He pretended he was a spy. He was not a spy. And pretend he could, like, you know, do spycraft and, like, kill people with random objects and, like, look how tough I am, and just burn his hand at public events. It was really gross. And he would constantly be like, we have to make this team more like the SS. They were great at organization. It's like, dude, you got to stop bringing up the SS all the time. Like, but they were great. I mean, sure, they do some bad stuff, but, like, no fault to them. SS, top-notch guys. Like, dude, you really have to stop talking about this. Love the SS. Brought him up all the time.
Also, the reason why on the Watergate break-in, why they got caught is because they tried to put tape over the door latch so they could go in and out without having to unlock it all the time. But instead of putting the tape vertically, they put it horizontally so the guard outside could just see that someone had taped the door.
He makes an appearance.
So
his friends
in the white collar prison went on a hunger strike. So they got transferred to the maximum security prison, which means there were spots open in the white collar prison. And Henry Hill tries to get sent over there.
He eventually does. I mean, he has to finagle, but he gets in by sweet talking the ugly secretary. That's what he does.
He sweet talks her, and then once he's in there, he starts playing up how Jewish he is. So he gets kosher meals, and then he gets to spend long weekends away for Shabbat, and instead he just goes to Atlantic City for the weekend every time and gets shit-faced and does gambling and reports back to jail on Sunday night.
I mean, props to him. I mean, he figured out. I mean, this might actually be the most Jewish thing he did, which is figure out loopholes on Shabbos.
I'm not pushing the button on the jail light
is already on. I am just opening the shade that covers the light. I saw something really funny. This is like a trending thing, apparently, of Orthodox Jews, like TikToker influenced types, but Orthodox Jews showing like their hacks for Shabbos, and they're really funny. Like, but someone's like, "Why do these people treat God like a hall monitor?" That was really good. But he figured it out. Oh, this is my ticket. I'm gonna immediately talk about how Jewish I am, so I can get extra days off. Extra days off my sentence, and I could have the easiest bullshit job and still cook a mean brajol in my office, my room.
Beef brajol, though.
They like veal a lot. Veal is very popular with the Guidos. I don't know, which is pretty. I mean,
because it's most expensive. That's probably why.
That's really probably why. Even it's pretty gross.
Yeah, it's not very good.
It's not better. I mean, it doesn't taste
better. It's a little too squishy.
When you think about what it is, you're like, ugh, it doesn't compensate.
The dude bought a slave. Veal is not on his high list of bad stuff.
No, it's just true.
But eventually he gets out of jail and he starts immediately just selling the fuck out of some drugs.
Well, this is a new thing. And this was also in The Godfather, actually. A big change in organized crime from being the traditional crimes of
blenders, you know, to drugs.
Well, in the good old days of organized crime, it was, you know, things that have always been around: gambling and hookers, and loan sharking,
just things some light that are human old, trafficking. You know,
the first three professions, and then they get to drugs, and it's like, ooh, that kind of, the old timers didn't like it. And in fact, Henry has to do it secretly because Paulie does not want any drug dealing. So Henry's now really deviating from the thing you're supposed to be doing by selling not just pot, but cocaine. I didn't know if this was racist or not, but one of his people working with him is a, quote, a Colombian named Mono the Monkey. I was like, I don't know. I don't know if this is racist or not, because we're like,
Mono just means monkey.
I know. That's, so I don't know, confusing. Why they called him the monkey is my point.
He was introduced to them by a friend, Tony Spaghetti.
Albert Dente. the name in Ernesto Coli.
Dirty Sal.
Dirty Sal, yeah. Sal Manella. But the other, there's one other thing that happened way earlier that's like, ooh, that might be a problem later, foreshadowing, and that sociopath murderer Tommy and Jimmy kill a made man. They kill Billy Batts because he, you know, insulted Tommy. Telling him to shine his shoes. Do you still shine shoes? Because, you know, Billy Batts had been in jail for years, and he comes out, and they have like a party, because that's what they do. They have a get out of jail quinceañera in the mafia, and he insults Tommy, and Tommy's insane, so he kills him ultimately, which you can't kill a made man without permission.
You can't unmake a man.
Right. Oh, that almost makes sense, but I don't think they thought of that. I think this is another one. You need like a form, and you need to have two witnesses.
Has to be notarized.
So this is a thing that will be a problem later. That's just in the background that we forget about. Until it's too late. So then he gets back into high drug selling. And then what happens, Nate?
Well, and then Jimmy finds out about the biggest heist of all time, the Lufthansa heist, where I found out that at JFK Airport, a lot of cargo comes in. Cargo comes in, and one cargo that comes in occasionally is American cash from Germany is being sent back to America, or like from German banks to American banks, because they need, this is like the cash that American tourists have spent in Germany, but they got to bring it back, I guess. They're exchanging it for Deutschmarks or whatever. And so occasionally pallets of loose bills will just like be sitting in a warehouse. I mean, it's not all the time, but just occasionally they'll be there overnight. And somebody who works in the management over at Lufthansa or over at the airport knows about it.
It's a guy who works at the airport who owes one of the mob guys a lot of money because he's a degenerate gambler.
The only kind of loser in this world.
And so he tells one of the mob guys, and then they figure out exactly what to do. And this was like the biggest cash theft of all time, at least up to that point, which was like $1 million.
They just had another one like last week, was like the biggest one again.
I mean, this was in 1975 or whatever when this happened. It was the biggest one.
But it was the biggest for a long time.
Yeah. And it was like pulled off with this like military precision, with obvious knowledge from the inside about like, don't you dare touch that silent alarm. And they knew, and the robbers knew exactly where everything was and stuff like that, and how to get into this part of the safe and then that part of the safe. And then, so they pull off this heist with like an enormous amount of money, except it's terrible because now there's so much heat on them. There's all this heat. Also, because there's too many people involved for like everyone to stay secret, to keep it secret. And people know a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy who like calls the cops, and then the cops immediately know who it is. They just don't have any like, they don't have like hard evidence yet to charge any of them.
But somebody's fucked up. The black truck driver guy has made a mistake. Played by Samuel L. Jackson in the movie.
Instead of ditching the truck in another state, he like left it by like right near the airport and went off to like get high.
He was supposed to take it to New Jersey to get it compacted.
Yeah.
And instead he leaves it parked on like East 96th Street. And so it gets picked up instantly.
And then the guy who told them everything that worked at the airport is like bragging around town about how he's did it and he's got a lot of money coming in soon. He's like, that's a bad thing to do, man.
And then people keep asking Jimmy, like, where's my share? Where's my cut? And he's like, fuck you. And so, because he doesn't want to give these people, you know, $150,000, he just kills them. And so, within about a year, like 10 people are dead. Like 10 guys who worked on this have all been murdered. But at the same time, Henry is like selling all these drugs, and he finally gets busted. He finally there's like a helicopter following him around. He's like, is that helicopter following me? Like, no, couldn't be. But they actually like arrest him in his house, and there's all these drugs that they didn't even find. And when he's behind, the feds start talking to him, and then after a course of a couple of weeks, they get him to flip. They get him to go into witness protection.
Well, he also knows that Burke was going to kill him,
yeah,
if he, regardless of what he did.
You know, and he also knows that one of the guys who ratted them out was the son of one of the guys who did it.
What the hell is his name?
One of the kids that got busted for selling some shit. And he's like,
I think he sold weed to an undercover cop.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, oh, I know stuff about the robbery. He didn't know that his dad was one of them. And I think Jimmy ended up killing his dad too. And then, but Henry knows this because they left his name on the court documents that they had in front of him on the table. It's like, oh, cops are so stupid.
The informant's name was on the court documents.
So then, and then that's it. And he goes into witness protection.
We skipped the weirdest crime in his entire book, which was
not buying a slave.
Shaving points off of college basketball games. So you could gamble on college basketball games. Not like win or lose, but like altering the point spread.
Because that's the kind of thing that the odds are ridiculous. So if you could manipulate that. Like they also had a thing earlier about the trifecta or something like that, or superfecta.
If you could pick the four top horses.
So at a race, racetrack in New York City at the time, there were, I don't know, 8 horses in a race. And if you could pick the top 4 in order, you'd get ridiculous return. And so they realized if they bribed like 4 guys to lose, they would be able to bet on every permutation of the top 4.
It's the most math they ever did.
Oh, I mean, they're like, Jesus Christ, take off one of your socks, Tony. I can't count that high. And then they would they would bet on all of it, and they would, no matter what, they would win. They would make money. And they did this until whatever organized horse trade, whatever the fuck that was.
Until the OTB noticed. Like,
they're like, this isn't working, right? We're not supposed to be losing on this. This is supposed to be impossible. So they're... And I think the point of that was to show like the lengths they went to commit certain types of crimes and how they
put so much effort into shaving Boston College basketball games. Like, which games can you like shave the points on? Like, we could do these ones because it doesn't matter if we win or lose these ones. So it was like, you know, work with the team, get it figured out.
But the players kept screwing it up. One of the guys just, that recruited
didn't want to lose.
They were like playing some team. They were up by a lot, but they needed to like not be up by quite as much. But one of the guys was like, I fuck that team. I just had to score the points. And so lost like $50,000 because they bet the wrong way on the spread.
And then they prosecute the two players, and one of them gets 10 fucking years.
They fucking did time, those kids, yeah.
He did more time than Henry did.
Yeah, he did.
For shaving points, not even throwing a game, shaving points on a team that no one really cares about. But it's because the prosecutor went to that school, I think it was. So,
listen, they won't let Pete Rose in the Baseball Hall of Fame. You know, gambling and sports, very serious business.
But they didn't put him in jail for a decade.
They would have if they could have. Paul Giamatti's dad, who was the commissioner of baseball, he would have done it. Did you know that? Paul Giamatti, the actor, his father was the commissioner of Major League Baseball?
That's so weird. Isn't that but it most... makes some amount of sense, and I don't know why.
It's like, I don't know. I don't think it's nepotism, but like, what the fuck is that?
There's like one of those weird things like, oh, okay. It's like how Jack Black's mom worked on the Apollo missions or like did the math for them.
Didn't Peter Tork from the Monkees' mom invent Post-its? Pretty sure that's true. That sounds like something Jimmy would make up.
That's a real Gretchen Wieners thing. I don't think my father, the inventor of the toaster strudel, would think very kindly about this.
Okay, so what did you think of the book as a reading experience, I guess, first?
Well, Jimmy, you've never seen the movie, so what did you think?
Oh, true. I thought it was fine. I thought there were, you know, interesting little stories. It wasn't really a book as much as it was a list of things that happened.
Isn't that life?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but it's, you know, it definitely felt more like a long journalism piece than a book, you know, which was fine. That's what it is. It's a, you know, it's a story of this dude's life. That makes sense. I didn't love it, but that's also because I just don't like mob shit. I just find the whole subject kind of uninteresting. It's never really done it for me. It was fine, though. I thought the buying the slave thing was pretty insane. Really glossed over that. I want to hear her story more than anything. I want a spinoff.
Nate?
So...
Nate the Wop.
It's been a long time since I've seen the movie, but I've still seen it, so that's just like what I pictured. And the book is so similar. Like in my version, there's a little thing from Martin Scorsese where he talks about finding the book and thought it was like just the perfect thing for a movie, and he was like, I can make the life the main character. And he worked in, so Martin Scorsese worked with the author to like turn it into a script. And so that's why it's so similar. But it's just so similar in tone because it's narrated by, you know, the Henry. Well, I mean, narrated by Ray Liotta as he does the stuff, which is just like the book. It's not just, whereas The Godfather is just, you know, like the story. This is actually narrated. In the screenplay, it's narrated by him and by his wife. I forget her name. Karen, was that her name?
Karen is the wife, yeah. And she was, by the way, the psychiatrist in The Sopranos.
That's right, yeah.
Oh. I forget the actress's name.
Also, one of my favorite things of this whole book, it was really dumb. I just thought it was funny. His mistress, Linda, her roommate was Vera Lynn. Was like, Linda and Vera Linda, come on.
I can't do too much Linda. just a regular
amount of Linda for me, not Vera.
The line about how Saturday nights are for wives, but Friday nights are for girlfriends, so that you know, you don't accidentally bring your wife to meet, you know, somebody else's wife to meet your girlfriend. So it's just like, don't bring your wife out on a Friday.
That was actually the most organized they got.
But sometimes they would forget the day.
Yeah, because Karen said, one time I was out and, you know, Jimmy had was with a girl that was not his wife.
Yeah, they both talk about that time. And she's like, oh, man, he was going to go over and say hi to her, so hi to the guy. And then he just felt her rage. He was like, I'll just wave to him.
The wife was an interesting, you know, it's not really a character, it's a real person. So it was an interesting person. For me, because at first she was just like, oh, yeah, I mean, he told me he was in it. He had a union job. He was a bricklayer or whatever. I saw the card. I figured he's going to work. I get it. And like, oh, it must be interesting for her. And then like way too long into their relationship, she's like, I didn't know what he was doing. Like, fuck you. You absolutely knew what was going on. You think he's making that kind of money bricklaying? You suck. You also suck, dude.
Yeah, she played dumb too long. And then, but then she said, like, she liked it. She liked the thrill.
They had a ton of
money.
She kind of
owned it. She saw like the other guys' wives looked like stressed out and haggard and tired.
That was probably, I think, the most interesting chunk of the whole book was for like just for a second, you see through all the bullshit and like all these wives are just haggard and nervous and everyone's husband's in jail or has gotten out of jail or is going to jail and everyone's miserable. And, like, they're not really living it up. They're just fucking on the edge all the time. And everything sucks. And, like, for, like, one page was like, oh, this is a look at what it's really like. And not, like, the glamorized version we get. Is they're all just shitty gangsters.
And when you go to jail, as much as they're like, oh, he didn't say anything. He's a good dude. Whatever, you know, he's a real man about it. He's taking it on the chin or whatever bullshit they'd say. Mm. Nobody helps out the wife or the children of that guy. They're just like, well, it's his fucking job.
I prefer my husbands that don't get caught.
Yeah. So you go to jail, and according to, as Henry puts it at least, you have to do more crime because you have to be able to pay for your family that's not in prison. I think he might have been justifying a little bit.
Vacation time in the mob is really terrible.
The work-life balance for the mob is really the problem.
It seems like they were all working so much.
They are, because they're not working
smart. Work hard, play hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you do a big heist and you net $10,000 in 1965 dollars in a night, and then you gamble away $10,000 that night, like, somebody got that money. I don't know. I mean, I guess Las Vegas got it. But even though they're like playing like back room craps games.
Yeah, they all lose their money to each other.
Yeah. But every transaction, like a little bit trickles up to the next big guy.
In his upline.
Sort of like food pyramid thing.
So anyway, we're talking about whether we liked the book, and I thought it was fascinating. I mean, learning how the mob works was really interesting. I mean, I agree that they're all shitheads. They all suck a lot, but it was still really interesting.
It turned out to be just a lot more like griftery than I thought it would be. Like, they're just like a bunch of low-class fucking hustlers, which is not the image we are presented with in everyday mob fictions.
Yeah, the glamour is all stripped away, and it's just, oh, they're just degenerates. I think what you said is interesting, right? Like, when you see the wives for a second, you're like, oh, they're tired, stressed out, miserable people.
They look like shit.
Yeah. That's the story. Like, if this book were made today, that probably would have been more of the center of the story. I think when this came out, it was just like, see how this shit actually works, and that was fascinating enough for people. Because they didn't know. Because nobody who had done as much as this guy did talked. So this was a rare glimpse into this world.
And I guess he's still in witness protection out there somewhere, yeah?
No, he's dead.
Oh, is he dead?
He left witness protection after a certain period of time. And then he became, I mean, at a certain point, like, all the other fucking people are dead. You know, he died in 2012.
Oh, okay.
But he was in witness protection. I was reading this earlier. He got out of witness protection, I think, I want to say in the early 2000s. And then he lived a few more years just kind of being like a Z-lister.
Yeah.
Just like,
I could see that.
You know, got arrested for some other petty bullshit because, you know, could not keep out of
couldn't
it, but would appear grifting in random things. Yeah, and that's all he knew. But the other ones all either went to jail and died there or died somewhere else. Like Joe Pesci, Tommy DeSimone gets whacked for killing the made man eventually. But one of the interesting things about that is that Henry Hill's story about that changed throughout his life. So in the book, he's not really very clear about what happened to him. He just says, like, they killed him. And it made Jimmy Burke really mad. And that's a big scene in the movie when they say, oh, Tommy's being made.
And that's when they tell him he's getting made and it's just an ambush.
Yeah. And so in the movie, they just shoot him. But in the book, they don't really give you any detail. But apparently at some other point later on in his life, you know, someone said, oh, no, they, like, tortured him or whatever. They changed the story about how he died, like the mechanics of his death.
Are you implying that this man, Henry Hill, might have been a fibber?
That's exactly what I want to say. So the story may have been fascinating and interesting, but, like, the details that could have been corroborated, sure. But everything else, he's probably just him fucking bragging and making shit up. Or, you know,
who brags about buying a slave?
A lot of Confederates.
Yeah, Confederates.
Confederates won. Andrew Tate.
Yeah, true.
And he's just full of shit. I like, if you look at the hardcover cover of the book, the quote, you know, it's like, oh my God, a fantastic thrill ride, the LA Times or whatever. Mm. It says, a fascinating book, Mario Puzo.
The authority.
But, like, what a not very interesting quote. It's fascinating. It sounds like a scientist describing it. So I liked reading it. But the movie's a million times better. The movie does. I didn't read if there was a Scorsese thing in my edition. I skipped it. That's exactly what he did. He made it about the lifestyle as the main character. Henry Hill is just narrating the lifestyle, and it's really well done. And it has been copied by a million things since then. It's like a way hipper movie. Like, it doesn't feel as old as it is if you watch it today. It's great. Whereas when you watch The Godfather, you're like, oh, I'm watching this classic film now. It's like watching Casablanca. It's just a different experience.
Yeah, I can see that.
You should watch it, Jimmy. It's really good.
I'll get around to it at some point.
Get your fucking shine box. But it's...
I don't know what that means.
That's like an iconic line from the movie. This also has the... funny? Funny like a clown?
Funny?
No, funny how?
Funny.
Yeah. Which I don't remember that being in the book.
I think that was improvised on set by Joe Pesci.
Is that right?
I think he improvised that.
And then, funny like, how?
That was another thing about the characters. You know, the mob guys are supposed to be honorable. Like they follow some sort of code, like they're Robin Hood or something.
Yeah, none of you had any sort of honor.
There is no moral compass. They are rudderless in a maelstrom of violence.
They're just backstabbing, grifting pieces of shit who will fuck each other over for money at the drop of a hat.
Or
a
for
very
nothing.
Italian hat.
Yes, of course. Right.
Or I don't know what an Italian hat looks like. Is it Mussolini's hat? I don't
know. Fedora, but it has a little feather in it.
Ooh, yeah, okay.
It has just the slightest bit of an olive oil grease stain from where you grab it to take it off and you tip it to people.
Malinguini.
But the capriciousness of the violence is something that clearly goes against the whole like noble. You know, they live by a different code idea. Because they'll just say something and a guy goes, go fuck yourself. And they go, go fuck myself. And then they just shoot each other. Or shoot a guy in the fucking back of the neck while he's taking a leak. And like, you mother piece of shit. And then they just piss on him. And they're like, that's what you get. And then the guys are like, yeah, that's what men do. And they
Is that smoke. Irony, Paulie?
I don't know. My wife does all the irony at home. But there is no code. It's just chaos, and until you get caught, basically, like very few of them die of old age and not in prison.
Yeah,
but it makes it interesting, I guess. But the movie's way better. Don't read the fucking book, right?
I still thought the book was interesting, but it is just like the movie.
Jimmy, you have homework. You can't let Nate have seen a movie you haven't seen
again.
And now you're like three behind now, dude.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind.
I'll get right on that.
Listen, Nate may have never seen Air Bud, but like...
it's a classic. There's no rules that say dogs can't play basketball. He was on the BC team. How do you think they shaved those points? Bud couldn't hit those threes.
They said the thing was like reverse Air Bud. On a technicality, a human has to enter the Westminster Dog Show.
And he's fully nude.
Oh, yeah. He's given tons of paw. All right. But thanks, Kevin, for recommending this to us. I hope we did enough Italian accents for you because that was in the
Ming.
Request. And if not, if you liked what you heard, head over to the thing or forget about it.
Oh.
And
Svachim.
And tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Or follow us on Twitter @drunkguysbc, as in Bafangul.
And go to
Is that a real word?
What is the other ones?
Oh, yeah.
Bafangul.
Yeah.
Go to the Facebook and Instagram @Bafangul. And find
Nathan's
us on Goodreads.
Never seen Italian people.
Find us on Goodreads, where we review different kinds of a pasta.
Until then, we're Parmigan.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.
Ming!